Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Books and Boba for November 2016. I'm one of your hosts, Marvin Yue, joined by Rima Yu.
Hello.
And Alex Van Chang.
Hi.
And we're here to discuss this month's book, which was Monstrous, a graphic novel by Marjorie Liu, illustrated by Sana Takeda.
And if you haven't read the graphic novel already, please do so now.
Yeah.
And we'll wait for you.
We'll wait for you for 10 seconds. I lied. It was 3 seconds. Welcome back. yeah, Reba.
Yeah.
You assigned us a graphic novel this month.
Yeah, because it was a short month with holiday fevers and drama. So I was like, hey.
Travel.
Like something light, but not so light. Nice. Like, I mean, like page number wise, it's doable. But then the content, it's... You know,
content's actually
pretty
dense.
Heavy.
Yeah,
pretty dense.
Yeah. It was. I guess we should start off with the description on the back of the novel. Set in an alternate world of Art Deco beauty and steampunk horror, Monstrous tells the epic story of Micah Halfwolf, a teenage survivor of a cataclysmic war between humans and their hated enemies, the Arcanics. In the face of oppression and terrible danger, Micah is both hunter and hunted, searching for answers about her mysterious past, as those who seek to use her remain just one step behind. And all the while, the monster within begins to awaken.
Dun, dun, dun! So this is an ongoing series, and we only read the first volume, which is a collection of the first 6 issues, I think.
Yeah, it's an ongoing series. I think the 8th one is just about to release next week, according to Marjorie Liu's Twitter. So, yeah. It ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, a really big cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I was tempted to buy the next issue, but I was like, no, wait for the volume. Like, I can't do issues. I need everything to be like compiled into one.
So you might want to keep that in mind before you read volume 1, is that, you know, it does end kind of on a cliffhanger.
Well, since it's a graphic novel, let's just talk about the art real quick. It's the first time we've had pictures in our books for this book club.
Yeah, picture books for adults.
And I guess Sana Takeda and Marjorie Liu has worked together before. They used to do X-23 together for Marvel. And it's a very, very detailed, like,
There's a lot of art deco and, like, the clothing, a lot of, like, embellishments and like embroidery, and everything is just very beautiful steampunk, and on top of that you have a lot of grit in it as well, so
a lot of East Asian and South Asian influences too.
Yeah,
and a lot of the clothing, and it was interesting. We had a couple like designers in our book club, our live book club meeting earlier, and they were saying they had a hard time getting through it because they had just wanted to see every single piece of design in each panel.
Yeah, they had the same problem I did. It actually took me a lot longer to read this compared to like our other books because I was like, everything's so pretty.
Yeah, and just so detailed. We were also talking about how like, because it's so detailed, it actually adds a lot to the world building. Like, it helps a lot with the world building.
Yeah. So this story, it takes place in, I guess, fantasy Eurasia, I guess.
Yeah, fantasy Eurasia, where, I mean, it's steampunk and not post-apocalyptic, really, but it's at like a really weird standstill where everybody has like high tensions.
It's in the middle of like a cold war,
or
a stalemate, right, between the two factions. And I guess we can talk a little bit about the world because
like, for me, I grew up with sci-fi and fantasy, so like lore and world building, like it's kind of languages that I speak. But for the layman, I guess, or for people who aren't familiar with that, there's a lot of world building and a lot of exposition that mm-hmm. goes into this, and they do it in between chapters and little historical lessons by
Professor Tam Tam.
Anapomorphic, I think that's the term, right?
Yes.
Anyways. Yes. but yeah, it's so we're thrown into this, I guess, this stalemate caused by a war between humans.
And the Arcanix.
And the Arcanix, which are, I guess, half-breed. Are they the half-breed demons, or are they the demons?
They're
the...
a hybrid of humans and ancients. And ancients are a powerful immortal race that take the form of beasts, usually. But Arcanix can pass as humans, but not all of them can.
Yeah, some of them have, you know, bestial traits, like tails.
Or wings. Or ears.
Or like one eye. And
yeah.
Yeah. And so there's been, I guess, a war.
I guess we should, this world is so big, mm-hmm. we should probably break it down a bit.
Yeah.
So, let's start with the races in this world, because like it is a very big component into the story, because there is a war. So we explained Arcanix, who are like these hybrids with magical powers. Mm-hmm. And then you have the ancients, who are godlike, and you have the old gods, who are these creepy looking monsters with eyes all over them. Think Full Metal Alchemist Pride, and you got your old gods.
They're like Cthulhu monsters. They're like cosmic horrors that are,
yeah,
that can't be explained.
Yeah,
they're just all powerful beings that have always been there, but are like either locked away or sleeping for some reason.
Yeah, like in the book itself, the characters are kind of like, we don't really know what they do. They just are kind of there because you can see them.
Yeah.
Like you can see them like wandering the countryside or whatever, but yeah, like no one really knows what they do.
But because of something that happened in the past, they get pulled into this conflict.
And then are we missing any, like, I guess the cats.
And the humans. Oh, the cats. Humans. Yeah.
I guess,
are the cats a different race? Are they?
Yeah, they are a different race. They're descendants of like one of the like older gods that are older than the old gods.
Yeah, they basically look like cats.
Yeah, but they have multiple tails depending on how old they are,
and they talk. And
they're all cranky.
Not all of them.
They all seem cranky.
They're all like supposed to be like wise, like teacher type characters,
but they're mistaken as spies and like manipulators.
Yeah.
But with the humans. Okay, so the war is between the Human Federation and the Arcanic Empire. And right now it's at a standstill, and there's this great wall that kind of divides the country. And with the humans, they're like at the front line of the war on the human side, there's the Kumea, which is a religious order that's all female. And they believe that the human race should be pure and free of Arcanic blood, and they kind of like capture Arcanix as slaves or as like, subjects to experimentation, and they kill them in very brutal ways, and then they make Lilium out of their bodies. Lilium being a magical source. Comes out of Arcanic bones, and
And the Lilium is what powers their like
supernatural powers, because some humans have supernatural powers of like telekinesis and pretty much X-Men powers.
And so the humans, their side is very like they're powered by like, steampunk inventions, like technology. Looks like they do worship like a
female goddess or something.
Yeah, or like some sort of pope figure.
Yeah.
And but the order itself seems very like technology focused, very like experiments, science.
Yeah. Like I was saying at the book club meeting earlier today that the Kumea, like they reminded me of like Unit 731, which was like a unit from the Japanese army when they were occupying China. Like this was a unit that did human experimentation on like prisoners of war, like women, children. They did like horrible things during the war, And it's kind of like similar to what the Nazi physicians did. And the Kumea, they kind of reminded me of them. And
right.
Yeah.
Let's get into that, actually, because you mentioned that Marjorie Liu, the author, the writer of the series, gave an interview about her influences. And one of the big influences was, in fact, her
grandparents
who lived through the Japanese occupation of China.
Yeah. Like her grandmother was 14 years old, and she was one of the children who had to like kind of flee China on foot from the soldiers. And then her grandfather was like part of the Chinese Air Force. So both of them kind of like went through this terrible time in history. And now, you know, they kind of like come out of it in their own way from like trauma, which is kind of what the book explores, because we have themes of like post-traumatic like stress disorder and like what war does to people, what people are capable of doing during a war, how they justify it. Yeah. Well,
right.
Yeah.
So that's the world that's the world. Been built.
It's
part
dark.
Of it. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's the political kind of sphere of it. There's the supernatural sphere of it. And then basically the story takes place when they all kind of collide.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like, before the main story starts, we're given hints about like what happened before. Like there's like the tragedy of Constantine that
right.
keeps getting mentioned,
which is the kind of the cataclysmic event that kind of caused the stalemate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was like a large explosion that killed like thousands of people
on both sides. Yeah.
And no one knows like what triggered the explosion. And so like, there's a truce because they're like, oh, like what if it's the other side that
Who has the weapon?
Who has the nuke?
Yeah. And so, we're introduced to our main character, Micah, Half Wolf, who we later find out is the nuke.
Yeah, she's the nuke.
Who's actually like kind of more of an independent player. She's kind of in the story for her own vengeance needs, right?
Yeah, but everything kind of converges around her.
Yeah. So, you want to talk about
Micah? Yeah, Micah is an Arcanic, and she looks fully human. And we're kind of introduced to her like, in a very interesting way. Like the first image that we see in the comic is her naked, like you see her missing arm, and you see like this religious brand on her chest. And you would think that like you would pity someone who is about to be sold into slavery, who right. is about to like kind of be thrown into this horrible thing. But you see her face, you see her expression, and she's just like, oh, like, I don't give a fuck. Like
she looks very defiant.
She's very defiant. She's like not ashamed of like what's going on right now. And it makes sense because she wants to be there. She purposely wants to be sold into slavery so she can find the woman who is responsible for her mother's death.
Right.
Who's like a prominent member of the Kumea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then as a result, through a plot, she does eventually confront this woman who is kind of a secluded, like crazy lady. Right?
A little bit, yeah.
Obviously still continuing her research. And you learn a little bit about the past that they all share, right?
Yeah.
Like Micah's mother and this woman.
Yeah, Yvette, yeah.
Have, they were searching for something together.
Yes.
Right? And then when they found that thing...
something terrible happened.
Yeah, when they found that thing, Yvette turned on...
Yeah, on Moriko, her...
Micah's mother. And then was that the Constantine incident? Was that when it happened? Or
it's, I think it's being that's, hinted that
yeah.
way.
Like, yeah, it's not, I don't think it's clear yet.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is that like that was what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
At Constantine and like Micah and Tuya, another character who's an Arcanic, that's how they kind of like got sold into slavery.
Right.
Because they're just kind of wandering around after like losing their home. But I did want to like mention that I was pretty surprised by like the lack of men in this series, because like Marvin, I'm really into manga, and like I like grew up reading it, but when it comes to comic books, American graphic novels, I'm kind of not well versed in it, but from pop culture, I've kind of like made the conclusion of, American comics, it's usually male superheroes, and there's not a lot of women in those comics. And then with Monstress, pretty much everyone is a woman.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone is a woman.
Like at most five dudes that have lines in the entire series.
Yeah.
And two of them are like racist farmers. You got like the two cats that are kind of dudes, I guess.
Yeah, and then you have Mr. Raven, yeah. Arcanic, Corvin. The women in the series, they're all very different. They're all like nuanced and no one is perfect. Everyone is very flawed. No, there are no saints in this series. But,
right. And none of them are fighting over dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like it was really interesting because this world is so clearly matriarchal. Like
right. It's
mainly run by women. And usually in fantasy series, we're kind of like put into the male gaze, I guess. Like with Game of Thrones, there's a lot of female characters, but they're kind of defined by the men around them or like the patriarchy.
Yeah, and they're still living in a patriarchal society.
Yeah, like with Queen Cersei, like she's a villain, but we're constantly reminded in the TV show that she's a mother first, she loves her children.
Right.
Whereas like with Monstress, there are terrible, terrible people in here.
Including terrible mothers.
Terrible mothers, terrible women who beat other women, who enable violence. And it's just like, oh, women are capable of terrible things, just as like men are capable of doing terrible things.
Right.
So it's like interesting because we're kind of free from that normal traditional gender structure that we see, gender bias structure that right. we see in pop culture and media. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And it all seems very intentional, right? Like it's like the reason they exist is because the author or the writer wanted to create a world that subverts all these
like regular accepted fantasy tropes, and right? Yeah. Comic tropes.
Because you have like Micah who like she went through this terrible past and like you would think that you would pity her and you would think that she's kind of like a plucky heroine who kind of right. like yeah, like the Mary Sue, right? But no, she's unlikable in some instances. Yeah. She's like not maternal to like to Kippa, the fox girl that she rescues.
Yeah. Yeah,
like she can be very brusque and mean, but there's a reason for that. Like she went through like a terrible childhood. And then you have people like Sophia and Yvette who are scientists and who are capable of doing really terrible things like eating organs of Arcanic children.
Yeah.
And then you have like warriors and scholars. Like it's really rare to see women in so many different positions
yeah.
and so many different lights, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of once you explained that it clicked something for me, but when I was reading through it, I didn't really notice it. And I think that's really interesting because, you know, it didn't register that I was like, oh, these are all women. The story was really good.
You thought they were just characters, right?
Right?
Yeah.
And but then you know it goes to show why representation is important because that's something that did click with you too, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, it's just, and I mean, that says something too that you didn't notice. It's kind of like, you know, like what you want from like a good story or a good writer is that like to look at all of these characters as like people first,
right?
You know, like that's how you avoid writing stereotypes or get falling into tropes, you know, is because you have like a wide range of like nuanced complex
right.
people and then they're just people. So
yeah
so
I guess let's talk a little bit about, well, okay, so you mentioned that, you know, the Kumea, the scientist, you know, they eat the organs of yeah. Arcanics. They like basically the Arcanics, in addition to being like monsters and the enemy, are also the source of their power.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of the political
commentary on it, I guess.
Yeah, the political sphere of like this war is happening. I mean, it's explained to the commoners as, oh, Arcanics are monsters, they deserve to be killed, but then you see that there is a like there's economic reason or like a very like person, like there's a
gain,
yeah, there's a selfish reason for it too.
Yeah,
Yeah, because like with the Lilium, like it enhances the Kumea witch's powers, and I mean you see it in like in real life history as well, like in colonization and in histories of like conquering other nations. It's like, oh, like this other nation has something that we want, whether it's land or oil or gold, and you're just like, how do we get that thing?
Right.
We do it by dehumanizing them. We give them a name that like that's not human. It kind of like strips away their humanity in a way. And with the Arcanix, it's like, oh, you're a monster, and it doesn't matter if you look human, if you can pass as a human, we'll find you. And and I think that was like really interesting, because it's just like, well, I mean, you're a supremacist group that says like, oh, we don't want any Arcanic blood in our pure human like DNA, but at the same time they are injecting that stuff into their bloodstream, like
right. They're like consuming.
They're consuming the thing that they're saying they should not have in their body.
Right.
So, like it's like really really weird in a way.
And like the graphic novel makes it very like you see like the severed heads and like the organs, like, and like
they're not glossing over it. They want you to like know what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, the good thing about fantasy is I think at the same time it puts this barrier between real life and just like fiction, right?
Right.
It's just like, oh, it's fictional. It's not something that would happen in real life. But just from like interviews that I've read with Marjorie Liu, like these are taken from war stories that she heard from her grandparents, is taken from research. These mm-hmm. are things that are based on real historical events. And
yeah.
When you read through the graphic novel, knowing that in the back of your head that some of these things, they're based on reality, it kind of shakes you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I saw like the experimentations and like the severed head of that Arcanic Cyclops, mm-hmm. I was just like, people did that to other people. Like scientists did that to like actual children during like the Cold War and World War II. And just like the thought of that actually being real, it's like, okay, like it brings another layer of like darkness over it,
right?
Yeah. And what, you know, Riro was saying is that like, you know, fiction and like fantasy in particular kind of like, I guess, gives you like a safe space to like really look at that, because it is hard to look at that, like if you were looking at a war book, yeah, or like watching a war movie, it is obviously really hard to look at like that kind of violence. But in the fantasy setting, it kind of gives you the distance that you might need to like actually look at it and think about it, you know, without your natural inclination to be like, oh, turn away, I'm just gonna ignore and pretend that never happened,
right?
You know, it's like, it's, yeah, it just provides a sort of safer way to engage with hard material.
Yeah, or like just a sneaky way to slip in like
that too.
Political like
yeah.
messages.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, we see this is a lot of ways we see the effects of like war, not from the viewpoint of like the soldier, but of like the civilian or like the collateral damage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Like I do want to mention like Tuya, who is like a friend of Micah Half-Wolf.
Right, like Micah and Tuya were, they met each other at an internment camp,
yeah,
right?
Like a concentration camp.
A slave camp. Yeah.
And they both came out of it alive, but, you know, like after that, their lives are kind of shaped differently. Like at one point, Tuya tells Micah, like, we built good lives for ourselves. Why do you want to go back and like dig up the past? So you have Tuya, who is kind of like, I mean, she's scarred by the war and by, like, the terrible things that she had to go through. But at the same time, she's kind of unscathed by it. Like, she's like, I'm going to choose to just close that door and just move on with my life and
right.
just be happy. Mm-hmm. And then with Micah, it's just like she has PTSD. Her memory is unreliable. There are gaps in it. And she's just constantly haunted by the things that like happened to her, and she's wondering like like with the monster that's inside her, she's like, oh, like, am I a monster? Am I okay? Right. Like, who am I? Like, she is kind of grappling with her trauma of the past and like what's going to happen to her in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just thought that was like a very clever way to like show two different types of like, oh, like two people can go through the same war and
generally the same trauma.
Generally the same trauma, but they deal with it in totally different ways.
Yeah.
Right.
And you see it with like Asian immigrants and refugees. Like some, like they went through the same,
yeah,
the same war, and some people, they come out okay. Some people, they're able to build lives for themselves and build a family, but then you have other people who are just like unable to kind of shake that past off of their shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't really learn a lot about Tuya's character. There is a big reveal at the end that we'll save till later. but you know, with Micah, like her trauma is still open, right? There's no closure.
Yeah.
It's more than just losing people. It's like not knowing,
right,
what, yeah, happened. And I guess this is a good time to go into, because you mentioned the monster inside.
Yeah.
Inside Micah, which, you know, the titular monstrous. So I guess, yeah, it's, you know, it's spoilers, whatever. You should have read this by now. there is some sort of, like, one of the old gods, I guess, is within Micah. And at first you kind of think it was caused by whatever research, whatever thing that her mother and Yvette discovered, but then later on the monster reveals that it's actually carried through her blood.
Yeah.
Right? It's like he's chained, like the monster is chained to her bloodline.
Yeah. And we were like joking at the book club that she is the weapon. She's the nuke. And and like we say that because like the Human Federation, the Kumea, they want to use her as like they want to use her, the lilium in her blood, because it's like pure.
Right.
She's like, she has this thing inside of her. And then with the ancients and the other Arcanists are like, no, she's a weapon that's like too dangerous for anybody to use. So we're going to put her in this really cool ass sarcophagus and we're just going to like keep it there.
Yeah.
Thought that was like pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you learn that both sides are actually working against her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Because she is this, like, X factor, right? She's this, like, A, reckless, and B, unpredictable, literal force of nature that can, at any moment, can, like, obliterate everything.
Yeah, and she has, right, her own agenda, because, yeah, she's not, like, it's not like she's fighting for the Arcanic cause or, you know, anything like that. Like, she's on a journey of self-discovery.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So.
Right, because much of the second, after she escapes from her initial kerfuffle in the Kumea compound, her goal is to learn more about her past. Right, she realizes that, you know, she finds a picture in Yvette's keep that shows more people that are with them in the expedition where her mother died, mm-hmm, and so now she's going to look for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we like made predictions because within like the first volume, it doesn't reveal all the answers, but we were saying like, oh, the monster inside of her, she keeps saying that like it's like something terrible because it makes her eat other Arcanics and, right, makes her like hungry. But we're just saying like, oh, but is the old god inside of her really a bad guy? Like, can't he be like the nine-tailed fox in Naruto? Like, it's like, I will lend you my power.
Well, okay, so they do allude a little bit to the backstory of the monster too, right? When they find out that the queen mother, or the queen, is it the queen mother?
Mother superior
of the Kamea, like the literal, the pope, the warrior pope of the Kamea order, is herself a old god made flesh, mm-hmm, right? And then you realize like two things. One is that, you know, there's this malevolent leader that is manipulating the humans to fighting this war, mm-hmm, to further their own self-interest while telling them it's because of purity or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And two, the Mother Superior monster thing alludes to that the old god within Micah is actually like the most powerful of them. Mm-hmm. And betrayed their own kind, right?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't go into details, but you kind of get this feeling that maybe he's not all that bad, or be like the monster is a like a rebel god.
Yeah.
Right? Someone who
it's like the people who came out of the war alive and kind of like in power, they've created this narrative that like benefits them the most, which is to say like, oh, he's a rebel god. Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, like I guess like I do want to talk more about like the racism in this world. I feel so hesitant going into this.
I mean, the fantasy racism is interesting because like instead of having actual like ethnic races, you can have mm-hmm. elves and dwarves. In this case, little, you know,
yeah,
half beasts.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
it's palpable from the beginning. Like,
yeah.
The first few frames is about like this nun slavery. Teaching kids about how all the Arcanics are beasts and they'll murder you and cats can't be trusted.
Well, like that made me question like, okay, like with like racial prejudice, none of us are born with that. We don't come out of the womb saying like, I hate like, I hate black people or Asian people. Like that stuff is taught. And
yeah.
You see it with the racist farmers in like one of the chapters where Micah is escaping with an Edenite lady who's like
one of the few male characters with speaking lines.
Yeah, yeah. And like they're saying like, oh, like Arcanics are terrible, and then like the Edenite lady, she says, oh, but your grandfather married an Arcanic, and like
right.
and like you guys were raised by this Arcanic lady. Like, how can you say something like that? And he's just like, I don't know. Like, that's like, we don't talk to our granddaddy anymore. And and it's just like, well, like you see people do that in real life. They purposely put these blinders on because they're mm-hmm. like, I don't want to see like the entire truth. I don't want right. to like you in that instance, you want like a scapegoat to your life problems.
Right. And it's easier to blame the other. In this case, the other literally looks different.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they don't. They can pass.
Yeah. Like Micah can pass. But yeah. but yeah, a lot of them are very obviously not.
Yeah. Some of them have wings. Some of them have
like extra like, eyes. Yeah. You know, like we've said, tails and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like with like Micah, who's like with Marjorie Liu, she is like of a mixed race background. Right. And I just can't help but notice that like maybe there's some commentary in like Micah, because like Micah can pass as like a human,
right?
Yeah. And there's like the question of like biracial and multiracial mm-hmm. children who are like, oh, you look more white, so you can pass as white, you can have these privileges.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the case sometimes. Like sometimes it's more complicated than that. They don't fit in anywhere, or they feel like they don't fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The line where they say that she can pass as a human was spoken by like the one of the like auction people. Right.
And he's like, are you selling humans as like slaves? That would be atrocious. And it's like, well, yeah. you're doing this to actual like living beings. I don't know like how much more horrific that would be.
Yeah. But I guess that's interesting because that you bring that up, because it's like, well, she can pass as human, but just because you slap like this label of Arcanic on yeah. her, then it's like, okay, like it's not atrocious to sell Micah, because even yeah. though she looks human and I wouldn't have known that she's not human because you told me she's an Arcanic, then it's not atrocious that we're selling her into slavery.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's like saying like, oh, like racism doesn't exist ish like
yeah
yeah
but it and I mean even with like the ancients, like before the war,
yeah,
they had their own prejudice, like
right
there was so one of the interstitial lore sections, they talked about how the first Arcanic was born, and it was born out of a union of human and ancient, and then the ancients were the ones who like killed the mother for like diluting, or like for engaging in forbidden.
Oh no, you're confusing it, because because there were two. Sorry, I like reread this last night, so like
so you're clear.
So I'm kind of clear. So there was a union with like an Arcanic and like a Kumea mm-hmm. or like a witch nun.
Oh, okay.
And like the witch nun lady had a baby, and like the Kumea were like, you need to, instead of like banishing the mother from like their organization, they like killed her baby and then left the baby on the Arcanic dad's doorstep. Is that what it was? But then, like, there's the other story of, like, the first Arcanic that came into
existence.
It came into existence, and that was, like, she was spirited away by, like, a cat, and then the cat, like, erased her true name from all records, and she became known as the Shaman Empress, and she, like, did great things. Like, she built, like, technology that was, like, far more superior than, like, modern technology. Right. But, yeah, like, there was, like, prejudice on all fronts. Like, it wasn't just, like, the humans who hate Arcanics. It's, like,
yeah. Right.
Ancients who hate humans and, like...
Like, that, it exists everywhere.
Yeah.
I just reread that section, and yeah, you're right.
I remember correctly. For doing her homework.
But they also mentioned that, you know, that was the, I guess, the event that allowed the Kamehameha to take, like, they were given unilateral power to be, like, judge and jury for these types of things. Mm-hmm. And that's how they became, like, the order that they become in the book. And essentially, they become like Judge Dredds, like just the law of the land,
right?
Judge, jury, executioner.
I don't know if you guys heard of the Bayonetta series, but the witches of the Kamehameha, they like remind me so much of Bayonetta because they're witches too, and they wear like the like Art Deco and like really cool character designs. But anyway, that was a side
note. So, do you want to talk about the Fox Girl,
or
the band of misfits that that Micah reluctantly travels with? So there's the cat guy who quotes the poets,
Master Ren, and the Fox Girl, yeah, Kippa. When I saw Kippa, I was like, oh my god, Shippo from Inuyasha. And like,
I thought she was gonna die in the first chapter. I was like, oh, are they gonna kill the Fox Girl? But she seems to have survived six chapters so far.
She's alive through volume one.
Yeah.
like looking at the Arcanics and some of the creatures in the series, they reminded me a lot of like Japanese mythology and Egyptian mythology. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of like Egyptian motifs in the art.
Especially in the one scene in the ancient like temple.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I think it was the Dawn Court.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you see all of these like beasts, like half human, half
with like beast. Animal heads.
Animal heads.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool. And like with the city of Zamora, which is the city that we're first introduced to, like it's kind of like it's technically a truce city, but
it's Berlin, right?
Like, and like they're like by the wall that separates like the Human Federation from the Arcanic land, but basically they're in line with the Human Federation. Right. They like have slave auctions. There's a huge Kumea like operation there. But I'm just thinking about before the war started. Like it mentions like in the interludes that humans and Arcanics, they got along, they had peace, and there was like this trade, and it just reminded me of like Constantinople,
right,
and
like the Ottoman Silk Empire Road.
Yeah, where like everyone just kind of like traveled and they met like kind of halfway, and there's like this melting pot of trade and like culture,
right? And it goes back to, you know, these prejudices, these no wars, you know. These prejudices are taught, right? They're formed over generations, and a lot of times, like you think about why othering happens, right? It's a lot easier to kill the enemy if you don't think they're human,
mm-hmm. right?
Right, and this is something that happens in wars. I mean, wars like it's you're literally just murdering a ton of people,
right?
Right. So you know how do you live with yourself? You convince yourself that the other person's not like. You shouldn't think about it.
Right? Yeah.
You dehumanize them. Yeah. You desensitize yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Do you guys watch Black Mirror?
No, I really want to.
Because the most recent season, actually, since you just mentioned that, the most recent season, one of the episodes deals with that.
Mm.
Deals with like kind of like how people deal with like committing atrocities or being able to kill. And it has, I don't want to give it away, but the episode's interesting. It's actually not one of my favorites, but it is very in line with like the Black Mirror like aesthetic, like what they like to do. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how they approached like how people others do, like other mm-hmm. the people they don't like, you know, or right. and in order to like justify like getting rid of them or killing them or driving them out or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just reminded me of episode.
And it's even more nefarious when you realize that, you know, like the Arcanics were othered for personal gain of like the Kamea, right? Who gained power from their literally their bodies, their dead bodies.
Right. Well, there's like the question of like how do you define the other, mm-hmm. you know, because it wasn't always about race, like at least in our history, in our timeline.
Right.
Because we've had wars over religion mm-hmm. where like the other is actually, they look exactly the same as you, but they just have different beliefs. So like the other, I like to me, I think it's just kind of a label that you just stick on other people. Like you can pick on them for like the smallest, most insignificant reason. You just put that label on them to gain personal benefits.
And I think that too is like that whole, it goes like, it's a good example of like the whole thing about Micah being being able to pass.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like we were saying with most or a lot of the Arcanics, like they are they literally look different from humans mm-hmm. and in like significant ways, not just like skin color or like eye shape or whatever. It's like, you know, they literally have like animal features.
Yeah.
So you can tell that they're not human. But with Micah, you know, she looks human, but it's literally the label of Arcanic that like, at least for the human side, like that's what lets them other her.
Right.
You know?
And like the monster tentacles coming out of her well, severed arm.
But you know, that's not her usual appearance.
Right. We have a couple minutes left, so let's talk a little bit more about just the setting. Like you touched a little bit about the Japanese or Asian folklore influences. And I thought that was super, obviously another intentional thing that Marjorie Liu injected into writing the story.
Yeah.
And that the artist was able to, you know, to fulfill.
Yeah, like I like when I saw the cover and like some of the some like photo, like some screenshots of like of the graphic novel before I bought it, I was like, whoa, this is not manga. Like this is not like Western comics. Like the style is in between. Like it's like I think like the panels are very Americanized, but then like with the clothing and with like the interior design and like just the way the facial features are drawn, they're very Japanese, very manhwa as well. So.
And just, you know, the idea of like animal spirits, animal.
With like
I say demons, but not really demons. They're that's, not really that's putting demons, a label on them. Yeah. I won't label the Arcanics that way.
I mean, like but, with Kippa, like I said, Inuyasha, and you know, like fox spirits and like kitsunes. That's Japanese folklore right there. And then you have there's like a chart in the chapter in one of like the interludes with Professor Tam Tam, and like you see the ancients, and they're kind of drawn to resemble Anubis.
Yeah.
And you have like the Egyptian motif there.
Anthropomorphic cats are like very Japanese, I feel like. There's one with literally an eye patch and samurai swords.
I mean, and there's also what is it? I just lost my thought. I remember. There's also a unicorn. I don't know if you guys remember the unicorn because he was killed pretty quickly, but I was like, dang, there are like Western creatures as well. That's pretty cool.
And then they have, you know, the so I don't know where the old gods come from. Like, I guess old that's gods, like,
I don't know. I just keep thinking Full Metal Alchemist. It's like so terrible.
Well, you have like Lovecraftian kind of like elder gods. Like,
I mean, like I was saying like at the book club that like with Micah and Tuya, when they're traveling with their group of Arcanics, like the tents that they use, the clothes that they wear, they're very Mongolian, mm-hmm. very nomadic. And then when we go to Zamora, this like metropolis, you see like like the Mandarin collar, yeah, and like with the soldiers, they're like, it's, it resembles like Mao
kind of uniforms, but I also think, like maybe like colonial,
yeah, like colonial India, yeah, or, and I'm just, yeah, like we've only like been to like two or three places in this volume, so I'm really excited to see what the other cultural influences are going to be, right, in like, yeah, future issues. I'm like, I want to see like the alternate version, alternate steampunk version of like South Asia, like, right, that would be so, right, cool. Like I want to see like steampunk Singapore and like Philippines,
right. So let's wrap it up by setting up, I guess, so at the end of the story, in the climax, you find out that the Mother Superior is actually another old god that's actually here. Like, they're looking for the old god that's within Micah.
Yeah.
They want its power. And Micah goes nuclear again to defeat it, losing the rest of her arm in the process. So you find out there's a cost for
power.
You find out that the Arcanists themselves are trying to contain Micah, mm-hmm, because of her power and her recklessness. And you find out that the leaders of that faction is Tuya, her best friend.
Yeah, the Baroness.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell like where the series will go from there because it's such a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think like especially this first volume does a good job. One, setting up the conflict and the world. So you know the factions. You know that, you know, kind of who's pulling the strings. Mm-hmm. But then everyone still has their own agendas. You set up kind of the rules of this power that's growing. This, like, this...
Right.
Essentially the MacGuffin, right? The central... What, mm-hmm, everyone's after. And then it leaves it open to... Basically... Micah is going after her goal, which is to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe find a way to control the power. And then everyone else is chasing her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she has one secret ally, Corvin, the Raven,
right,
Arcanic, who's part of the Dusk Court. I thought he was pretty cool. I hope he shows up again.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, you know, he recognizes something in her, or I guess that allows him to...
Yeah.
Disobey his orders and like
allow her to escape. I think it's just the fact that like he sees that like she's not just this weapon. Like she's like not a human being, but she's like,
right,
she's like someone with her own pain and own agenda.
He's able to overcome the labels that his superiors have, yes, granted her with.
Yeah.
Wrapping it all up. Sees her as a person.
Yeah, right? Sees her as a person. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good, like end place for, like, you know, like, the bigger story is about to unfold now. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
yeah.
I guess, what are your final thoughts about the book?
Final thoughts. Wow, is it dense for a graphic novel.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Wow. The art is dense and the material's dense. But it's really good.
Like a lot of our members at book club, it was their first time reading a graphic novel, and I kind of feel sorry that I picked this one because
it's dense. Is also like there's a lot of, it's very violent too.
Yeah,
there's a lot of violence. A lot of,
actually not as violent as some comics that I've read in the past and some graphic novels I've read in the past. But it's just enough to like instill horror in you.
Yeah. And Marjorie Liu, she used to write for X-23. She's currently writing, I guess, a Han Solo comic series.
Yeah. She's written a lot of paranormal like novels.
Yeah, yeah. But she's definitely like, her style is like strong female characters who aren't afraid to murder.
Right. But yeah, like I think it was nice to this is only our third book mm-hmm. in our book club, and I'm just like, yay, graphic novel. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like new genre.
And it was like very like heavy fantasy, you know, like, you know, because we did like the paranormal,
yeah,
like, sort of, not like fantasy.
But still based in the real world.
Yeah.
This one is like.
This one's like high fantasy, yeah, you know.
There's no world and everything.
Yeah.
Alice, what were your last thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I liked it a lot. And I think it's worth a look. And I guess it's like, it's kind of like, if you're kind of, I feel like if you're a person who's like kind of iffy about comics, like this might be a good one to look at just because it's so different, you know, and like the story's interesting. And again, the art is gorgeous. So, you know.
Yeah. But if you're looking for a one shot.
Like, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of have to be in for the ride.
Yeah. This, for some reason I thought it was a one shot until
sorry,
I realized,
I
no, no, it's my fault for not, but it's definitely, it pulled me in. Like I told, Rira, like, or I told, I've told you this in the podcast before, but like I have a very, like I binge and I read through this all in one night again. And then I immediately went on to Amazon to look at where the next chapters are. So apparently Marjorie Liu is releasing, chapter 8 in a week from this podcast recording. Okay. And yeah, the story goes on and I'm debating whether to wait for volume two
or
just
to
go and
just
get the issues.
Yeah. I did mention like at the meeting, I was like, oh, like I would really want to see a TV show made out of like adapted from the monstrous world, because there's so many women and like you don't really see that in like in TV shows, or there's always like that one token like female character in like a dystopian world, and it's like, wow, like there's like the world is ending and there's only one girl.
Yeah.
Like, so like it's nice to see so many like women of color and people with like Micah, she her arm is like missing. It's like nice to see like people of like disabilities and and like it's just like so different, and I would really love to see that on screen.
Right.
But at the same time, I know that like it would be very difficult to produce simply because of budgetary reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do anything with computers these days.
But then it looks
cheap. This one needs like a master of practical effects and like design. Like,
yeah.
Like a Guillermo del Toro or something like that.
Even like
yeah,
I would even settle for like a CW like sci-fi series, just so like we have more diversity.
I got some money to put behind
screen.
That. Yeah. No. But yeah, that was our discussion of Monsters by Marjorie Liu, illustrated by Sana Takeda. A really, really great series that y'all should check out, and hopefully you did since you're listening to this. And I know I'm looking forward to the next few episodes or chapters. The next few chapters of...
Speaking of next episode.
Yeah. What are we reading for December?
We are reading Charles Yu's How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe.
Awesome.
And it is a witty, comedic, sci-fi metafiction about a time travel technician who is in search for his father. So something that is a little bit different, but not too different from Monstrous. We're jumping from fantasy to sci-fi.
But it should be good. Charles Yu, of course, is also the brother of Kelvin Yu, who you may know from Bob's Burgers, a writer on Bob's Burger, or as Aziz Ansari's best friend on Master of None. And Charles Yu is also currently I guess he's a story editor on Westworld.
Oh, cool.
So he's got some chops on him.
Yeah, but... actually, the next episode is probably going to be a mid-month episode where we talk about news and releases.
Right, yeah. If you haven't been following our podcast, we did release a mid-month episode this month and talked a lot about the continent and the controversy surrounding that.
That feels like such a long time ago.
We'll see what happens in the month of December. But yeah, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or wherever you find podcasts. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. It'd be nice. I want to read what you think about our podcast. Thanks again, Alice, for joining us.
You're welcome.
You should just be our like third regular guest or host.
We'll see. I don't know if
she's a regular, but
yeah, I'm a regular for now, but maybe I'll get promoted in 2017.
But yeah, thanks so much for listening. Keep reading,
keep
I guess.
Reading.
Keep reading.
All right. Bye. This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue, Rira Yu, and Alice Van Chang, and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. For further discussion on the books covered at Books and Boba, please visit our Goodreads forum. You can find the link on our Facebook page at Books and Boba, as well as by searching for the group Books and Boba on Goodreads.com. Books and Boba is also a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a brand new collective of Asian American podcasts and podcasters. You You can learn more about the collective as well as check out our founding slate of programs by visiting the website www.podcastpotluck.com.